This is Gene Meth and Muriel Gutman, tape 3 with Arthur Jaffe. We will now continue. When we last spoke, you were talking about coming back and recruiting for Haganah. And where did, in what direction did that take you?
Well, recruiting for the Haganah, processing young men and women for the Haganah, and there were women, entails a process like any army. We had physical examinations, we had evaluations as to whether we thought they were psychologically prepared and fit, were they mentally stable, well-balanced, what skills did they have, were they a nurse, could they fly a plane, could they fire a gun, and we recruited on that basis. We had a list of needs from Palestine, from the Israeli army, or what would be then the Jewish army, saying that they could use specific skills, and we tried to fill those skills.
This certainly was or was not done with Uncle Sam's knowledge?
It was probably done with Uncle Sam knowing, but looking the other way. Because when somebody left to go to Palestine, out Israel, Palestine at that point, they still had to get a passport, they still had to have visas, we still had to give a reason why one was going there. You never said, I'm going to join the Haganah, because then the government would have said, oh, we can't allow that kind of thing. So we had to do all those kind of preparations, help them with all those arrangements, arrange for their transportation, make it, not to flaunt it in the face of the government, we tried to make it look like these things were not happening, although we were convinced that they did know they were happening, and simply let it happen because, first of all, there was a lot of sympathy for that. It would have been a human cry from the American Jewish public. It was right after the Second World War. We just fought the Nazis so that the Jews could do their thing, and now the Jews are doing their thing, and how are you going to stop them from doing that? So, yeah, we felt that the American government did know.
For how long did you do this recruiting?
Oh,
we started, I think, in February of 1947.
That was when I went, 46 I went to Israel.
But the recruiting
would have been, would have been coming back in 40, I came back the end of 47.
I see. Okay.
Okay, so the recruiting would have been done from that point on. And, the recruiting went on for another year or so, because by then there was a state. When it became a state, then there were some more complexities involved. Now there was an army, it's no longer the Haganah, and I wasn't recruiting. I was recruiting for Defense Army, the Haganah. We were recruiting for pilots. We were recruiting for special kinds of nurses, and we paid some people. If they wouldn't go on as a volunteer, we offered to pay them, and we did. And we had non-Jews also who went.
And then where did you go from this point?
Well, from this point I started to settle into being a businessman. I joined the family business, small town. We had a number of stores. We bought a store in Bradford, Pennsylvania, another small town, and I went to Bradford to open that store and run that store, and I did that until right before I got married.
Where did you meet your wife?
Well, I met Lois at a wedding in Baltimore. The son of the man who bought and equipped the ship, the Exodus, it was his son who was being married. And I was a friend of this man by the name of Mo Spirit. and he was in the liquor business. He was a manufacturer, manufactured liquor. And he bought this Dayliner, which became the Exodus, and saw that it got equipped. He bought it in Baltimore. And I had met him, first of all, I'd known him years back as a through family connections. And then when he got involved with the Exodus, with the ship, after that fiasco was over, he came to Palestine, and I was assigned to taking him around the country and showing him the country. He had never been there. So, in Lois's family, her father was in the liquor business and was, in fact, a customer of Lois Beer's. They lived in South. Lois's family lived in South Carolina. They were in Greenville, living in Greenville, South Carolina at the time. So I went to this wedding, although I was sick. That's how I got to the wedding, as a matter of fact. I had contracted a disease in Palestine called Leishmaniasis, and landed up at Hopkins.
What is
Leishmaniasis? Leishmaniasis. Maniasis. Leishmaniasis. And it is caused by the bite of an oriental fly. It's not found in this continent. It's found in the Middle East, India, essentially. And I obviously got it in the desert when we were on training. I was bitten by a fly. And it's a very common disease among the Bedouin. And it's a parasite. It's into the bloodstream. And so they don't see it in the United States. So that's how I landed up at Hopkins. They couldn't figure out what was wrong. And there, they had had some cases during the World War II where soldiers had been sent back, and some people there recognized the disease. And so I had to be in Baltimore to be investigated, and this wedding was taking place at the same time. So my friend said, you were invited to the wedding, and if you're well enough to walk, you're well enough to come to the wedding. So that changed my whole life, going to that wedding. I met Lois at the wedding, proposed to her the same day. She accepted.
The same day? The
same day. Here, you're crazy, but I will. We were married, and I've never seen her before in my life.
Unbelievable.
I know. If any of our kids did that, you'd kill them.
Absolutely.
True.
But I recognized a superior and unusual person, even then. I was good instincts, lucky, very lucky. And that's how I met Lois. So actually, we didn't get married that day, but she was in last year at Northwestern. So she speeded up her graduation. She was to graduate. This was in September of 48. And she was to graduate in June of 49, so she speeded up her graduation and got finished in March of 49, and we were married in April of 49. I saw her twice. I saw her at that wedding, and I saw her at Christmas. That was it. Never saw her any other time. We corresponded, called on the phone. And so what I did when I got back was I continued to do these things, to recruit, to speak on behalf of Israel, I got involved with Dave Lowenthal, whom some of you remember, mm-hmm. who was a member of the ship, the Exodus. He was on the crew of the Exodus. And I met Dave through all of these incidents. And of course, I helped recruit and process Al Twersky. And when he came back, he became part of a team along with Ralph Atlas. Some of you know Ralph, who was originally a member of the Haganah back in the late 30s. And we formed a team. There was a lot of people who felt, not only Jews, there were certainly Jews, the Council for American Judaism, for one, who did not believe there should be a Jewish state. And there were many, many American interests who did not want to see a Jewish state, particularly the oil interests. And so there was a lot of propaganda in the country why there should not be a Jewish state, and not to help the Jewish state, and not to recognize a Jewish state, and not to supply arms, not to do anything. So Ralph and I, and Dave, and I guess Al, we went around the country, not only in Pennsylvania but elsewhere, going to meetings and being in audiences and raising questions and fighting back. So we continued to do that for a while. I became, at that time, a vice president of the DOA for the Tri-State District. And I was just active in a lot of Jewish affairs. But essentially what was happening was I was going away from those eventually because I was getting married. I was involved in family business now, and I soon started to have children.
Did you move to Butler or to Bradford?
I moved from Bradford. We hired a manager, and I moved back to Butler.
After you were married, you moved to Butler.
Right. After we were married, I moved to Butler. Married in April of 49.
And do you want to tell us something about your family?
Well, that's the small town part, rearing a family in a Jewish family in a small town. We quickly had a family. First of all, for my time, I was married rather late. I was 28, which during the Second World War and after the Second World War was most unusual. Most everybody was married before they went into the Army, when they went into the Army, while they were in the Army, or immediately upon getting out of the Army, one of those, and I didn't fit into any of those categories. So I thought 28 was very old.
And
Lois
was how old?
Lois was 20.
Because I figured if she was just graduating,
yeah, she was 20. I think when she graduated, she may have just turned 21.
So how long did you wait before you began your family?
Right away. People counted. So we had three children the first 5 years we were married, and then we had a fourth one a couple years later. So within the first 7 years of our married life, we had four children. And as her father always said, she's a real Southern girl, barefoot and pregnant.
What were your children?
Two boys, two girls.
In that order?
No, a girl, two boys, girl.
Mm-hmm. And they went to Sunday school and regular school in Butler?
Yeah, we lived in...
The same kind of upbringing that you had?
No, first of all, we lived in a Gentile neighborhood, a totally Gentile neighborhood. There was not a Jew in the entire neighborhood until many years later. So they grew up in a totally Gentile environment. And there was no longer the daily Hebrew school. There was a Hebrew school that you went two times a week, three times a week, not like we went four or five times a week. And
was Lois of the same background, Orthodox, conservative?
Certainly not Orthodox. I would say she came from, at most, conservative.
And
right.
Was this a problem then to provide a Jewish background?
No, I think the problem was that we provided a Jewish background in a time when anti-Semitism was not de rigueur, was not popular. Right after the Second World War, Gentlemen's Agreement, all that, if you recall that period of time, no longer was a good idea to be anti-Semitic, and it was a time of kind of liberalism. And it was a time to be a Jew. We had just just been victorious. It was time to change things in the country. And while that doesn't mean it just didn't continue to be, it doesn't continue to be anti-Semitism, there was a change in mood. This was not the 1930s when I grew up, with Nazism throughout the world and spilling over into Butler, Pennsylvania, where we had the silver shirts. When my children grew up, there were no silver shirts.
So it was a happier time.
A happier time, definitely. And,
did Lois work?
No, well, she was pregnant.
No, she didn't work.
But
she didn't work outside.
Well, she didn't at that time, no. Lois was very active in Hadassah, extremely active in Hadassah, so active she was in the regional. I have found a letter in which she was asked to be national education chairman, the entire Hadassah. This was before she ever went to work. She was very skilled, very good teacher, a natural teacher, and a very bright woman. But we had an incident that really changed her life and my life, and the incident that eventually led her going back to work. When our youngest was 7 or 8 months old, she was nearly scalded to death, and in the hospital for a long time. And that, you know, we were pretty typical after the war, middle class, suburban Americans, meaning that we were leading a good life, and we had our station wagon, and we entertained, and it was a time to relax after the Second World War. The times were pretty good throughout the country, and we weren't terribly involved in anything very deep. We were involved. I was in the synagogue and this and that, but we really weren't dead serious about things. And that incident gave us a whole new perspective of what's really valuable in life. And after when Julie finally, the one who was burned, recovered after several years, and she then, Lois, then when Julie went to public school when she was 6 years old and then started going to school, Lois decided to go back to university and get, she's always wanted to be a social, well, she was originally a good writer. She took journalism, graduate journalism from Northwestern, but had a very excellent writer. She decided that she thought she wanted to go into social work. So she went back to Pitt, traveling two hours a day, more than 2 hours, because by the time she got there and parked her car, and she did that for 4 years, and graduated head of her graduate school class, and then she became professor at the University of Pittsburgh. So then from that point on she did work, but she did not work the first, well, I guess it would be about the first 12 years of our married life, something like that, that period of time from the first child until Julie went to school, which would be 12, 13 years. Yes, those first 12, 13 years, she was a mother, housewife, member of lots of organizations, National Council of Jewish Women, Hadassah, AAUW, Junior Women's Club, and all that sort of thing.
Junior Women's Club.
First U.
The hospitals and all of those places didn't have too many.
Did not have a Jew until Lois was invited. Lois came from a small town at Greenville, South Carolina, was small at that time. She was president of her high school class. Washington and all, you know, amazing. In a redneck country, she was voted most likely to succeed. I never knew all this until, because she lost her yearbook. I never saw it. First of all, I didn't know her. That's the first thing, I didn't know her. Secondly, she never had a yearbook, but when she went back for her reunion, guess her 20th or 30th, I don't remember now. And she, as president of the class, she got up and said, "Everybody, you have to everyone. You have a big advantage over me. You have a yearbook. You probably looked at it before you came." Yes. And she said, "I didn't have a chance to study this." And so after she came back to Butler, her old high school sweetheart, not Jewish, sent her his copy of the yearbook. She said she had lost hers. And I read the yearbook. And I read it and I said, "If I had known this, I never would have married you. I'd have been terrified. I mean, you were everything." You know, you were, well, she was elected most popular, most likely to succeed, and most something other else, president of the class. So I guess my instincts were good the first time. I recognized quality. So that's more or less the story of Lois's background. She came from a small town. She knew all her friends were Gentile. One of her good friends was Joan Woodward until the day she died. And Joan Woodward also went to high school. And, No, she didn't go to Northwestern, no. She was in high school with Lois at Greenville High School. So all those friends were Gentile. And so she was like me. She knew very well how to get along with them. They liked her. And she was the first Gentile, the first Jew that they took to the Junior Women's Club, and then she was very active in that.
Your children then were in practically all the way to school when Lois started to work at that. And she actually was a professor at Stitt.
Well, no. No, they were still, some of them still, no. The only one who was in college would have been the oldest one, Jeannie. When she first was teaching. Lois started teaching in 1966, I think it was.
You had a well-organized home.
It had to be. It couldn't have been done. And Lois was always the first to say that she couldn't have done it without me, because she had to be at Pitt by 8:00 in the morning. Meaning she had to leave Butler by 6:30 in a February morning with ice on the road or more. So that meant that somebody had to get the kids off to school and, you know, just get it organized. And they didn't design class schedule to suit her, so she might have a class at 8:00 and have one at 3:00 and not have another one till 4 or 5 o'clock. So she never got home. Many days she didn't get home till 5 or 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. Yeah. They were hard days in the sense that they were from the point of running a family, but she had lots of energy.
And your life was more or less this pattern until she developed her illness, is that right? I think I lost contact with you and I really got familiar with that time span or...
Yeah, well, she started teaching and then she... became ill in April of 1973. April always seems to figure in our lives. We were married in April, and our anniversary is in April. She contracted leukemia, or was diagnosed in April, and she died in April. So...
But quite a few years later.
Five. Almost to the day.
When the children were growing up in Butler, did they have any problems with the school clubs and that sort of thing? Was that a problem?
We had a Catholic family living across the street from us, the McCorys. And one day, a couple of our kids came home crying because they were told they could not go to heaven. And they weren't Catholic, and they couldn't go to heaven. And we had to go through, that's not atypical, but that's right. So, no, they, you know, there's still a lot of anti-Semitism expressed in a small community, particularly where you don't, where you get into class of people who don't cover it up very well. And you run into those in a small community because, you know, you don't have the rich high school. You've got the high school, and that's where everybody is. And we were the rich merchants on Main Street, the Jaffees, the department store. And Jews, all Jews are rich. It's very similar to the
same
kinds
thing that
of
you
things.
Had.
Sure, sure, exactly. And they didn't like that. They didn't like being Jewish for those kinds of reasons, you know.
How were you as a businessman? Did you have those problems with the organizations, with the service organizations?
No, not really. I was a member of Kiwanis. Hated every minute of it, finally resigned. I think my most ignominious moment in life was participating in the Kiwanis Minstrel as a men man. As I told you, I used to sing a lot, so of course not anybody could sing, they put him in a minstrel. And no, I joined them. And they co-opted me in many ways. I was president of the Downtown Businessmen Bureau. I was chairman of the Cancer Crusade. I was on the United Ways. I was co-chairman and budget committee. All those kinds. I was chairman of the school building authority. You know, we were active businessmen. We supported the cultural events in the community, underwrote those kinds of things. I was president of the synagogue, all those kinds of things I was involved in. The country club was excluded. Jews could not belong in the country club. That was the bone of our contention. And most of the people I associated with were very sophisticated, and they certainly weren't going to bring up any matters about being Jewish that were unbecoming. So I never had that kind of problem. Occasionally we'd get a dissatisfied customer who would then use the fact that you're Jewish. And that's why, you know, you're not a very good businessman, and you don't know how to treat people, and that type of thing. The only time we had any problem in the as a businessman from a religious point of view was Good Friday. In a small town, stores used to close on Good Friday for either all day or half a day. After the Second World War, this started to break down some. And we didn't lead the way because we let other non-Jewish stores lead the way. And those non-Jewish stores, some of them would start to open, and so we said, well, you know, they're going to open, we're certainly going to open. Well, we said to our employees, if you want to go to church, just go. Let us know that you're going to be gone and go. But we'll be open. You can come back when you're ready to come back. So one year, the Christian Businessmen's Association, there is such an association in Butler, and they organized the ministers, and they came around to see all the merchants to get us to close on Good Friday. And I gave them an answer that put an end to that. We had a tradition, the Jaffees did at least, of closing on Rosh Hashanah on Yom Kippur. We closed, no matter what. No matter what day of the week it was. So we said, we will do that. we will close for Good Friday if they will close for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that put an end to that issue. Then they tried to get us to close for Veterans Day parade. And they came to me to that, and I said, you get the mills to close because there's more veterans in that mill than all the women who work in my store. I will close. We'll all close, and that's fine with me. That never happened. Those are the, that's about the extent of it. I never really had.
And were you in the partners in business?
My brothers, two brothers. My brother Sid, my brother Lewis, and I were equal partners.
Was your father
years.
Still in business?
No, my father retired. My father retired when we came back.